Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, Jay, David, and Vicki will sit down with Mark Burnett, owner of Kentucky Tennessee Livestock Market in Guthrie, Kentucky, and the current president of the Livestock Marketing Association. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing. Thanks to you. Vicki kind of saved my bacon yesterday.
Did she now?
She did.
I did. Helped him out.
Lexington was looking for, you know, a sign-in sheet from a meeting that we'd done for them a long time ago. They decided a couple weeks ago they needed it. So for a couple of weeks, I have flipped my office upside down looking for it. And I was about to the point that we was going to write a new one.
Yeah, that does happen.
I called Vicki to tell her what we was going to do today and what I was looking for. And she said, I got it. I said, well, you mean you got it? And she said, well, we had it at my office. I've got signing sheet right here.
She'd had it the whole time.
But in my defense,
I did not know he was looking for it, so I didn't hold out for 2 weeks by any means.
Yeah, I didn't tell her I was looking for it until I called her. You know, I said I have looked everywhere for this thing.
And
sure enough, right there it was. She sent it to me in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I keep my sign-in sheets for the year in my office. So when he called me and he said something about that program, I just turned around while we was talking and grabbed it. And I told him, I said, I had just put them in order. So it was like right up in the top because it was in February. So
Vicki's sneaky like that, though. You know, she'll hold out on you if she can.
That's fine. She saved my bacon yesterday, and I was glad of it. I just felt my blood pressure dropping.
There you go. I never let mine get that worked up about what somebody in Lexington wants, though.
Yeah. Well, you let it get worked up about everything.
I do. It doesn't get worked up about that, that's for sure.
It all worked out. That's the main thing. It all worked out, and the sign-in sheet has now been sent in, and all is good.
That was a busy 2 weeks looking for nothing, something I didn't have.
I bet.
Well, glad to have everybody here today. We're once again down in Guthrie at the Stockyards, and with us today, Mr. Mark Burnett. How you doing, sir?
Just fine.
Glad to have you here with us.
Appreciate y'all coming.
Oh, I tell you what, it's been a good partnership between your sale barn and UK for a lot of years, doing a lot of things, and we appreciate all the work you and your crew have put into some of the special sales. Everybody's getting ready today for the bread heifer sale the next day, going to be Saturday of this weekend, and we appreciate everything you do to accommodate us.
Well, y'all have been very good to work with, and it's been a good partnership. We really appreciate y'all's support.
Sounds good. Mark, if you could, just tell a little bit about yourself and about your sale barn, how you come to be in this business.
Well, I was going to college, and I guess it may have been chemistry that put me out. But the opportunity.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
The opportunity to and then public speaking, you'll probably see that today. But I had got most of my ag classes in, and I decided I sort of would rather stay on the farm or do something with agriculture than finish up school. So the opportunity to work here, and I heard it was for sale, and came up and worked for a while, and got an opportunity to buy in, and that was in 1978. So been around here for a long time, have enjoyed the business. Seen a lot of people, met a lot of people. The sad thing is happening right now, I'm getting to sell a lot of people the last time that when I came, there were, you know, customer that I just met, but did another one yesterday. Was here from when I started, and we finished up last of his cows yesterday. So, and I tell you, that's becoming a pretty big thing in our that we're seeing in our business a lot, and it is trying. But back to I did get in at that time. Been here since 78. It was a market that graded. Mainly just as a graded weigh-in sale, sort of was talked about there for a while, said that's something you're going to have to change. That's not going to work. Just go on and stop that. But we built on it rather than tearing it, you know, pushing it back, and just added a few more as cattle, different grades, and graded pretty much anything that was out there. If it didn't have a flaw or just really odd, we sort of found a place for it and found a group. And it seemed like that it really helped that producer to get to sell in more of a group pattern than the singles and doubles. And we felt like over the years that was a good thing. And so we built on that, and that's been good. I think we've had the highs and the lows. We've seen the cycles come and go. And I think we're in for a good time right now. The cattle market looks real good now, and it's a good time to have some. You're pretty proud of them. Our costs are pretty high, but we are back in a little more favorable time right now. And my sons are involved in the business. John Walker was his uncle was one of the partners here, and that we bought the market from, the Billy Pugh. So he has been involved in it from Hopkinsville. So it's been family and good friend over the years, and we have made it work have enjoyed adding some of the new sales and things like that as we get more advanced. The videos, I used to think, how would you ever sell a cattle on video? But as we know, technology has changed a lot of things we do, and if you don't advance with it, it'll leave you behind.
Yeah, we even had our bull sale was on video. Everything was on video this time. Something new that we tried that Mark and them were just, all about trying, and we sold all the bulls on video.
Right.
So this is an up-and-coming thing, and, Mark and them are kind of right on the cutting edge.
Try to participate in those programs, and it's, people have gotten used to doing the business that way, and it's I think you have to sort of compromise and used to, everything was sight on, had to be in front of you. But reputation, I think that means a lot. And I feel like over the years with the grading of the cattle, your reputation is online every week. So if you do make a flaw in that group, it's going to come back to you. So it does put a little more pressure on that type sale to really look at it and represent it the right way. But it's been received well, and we've tried to advance into the modern times as best we can.
I think this sale is different, and you also own the stockyard at Cross Plains, Mark.
Right, I was going to mention that. I said it was Guthrie, but you actually have a second location.
That's right.
And I think something that's different at this sale barn than some other sale barns is they do, and it's kind of the trend. But they've been doing graded pens for a long time.
Yes.
And, I think Mark alluded to that, and they've added some different classes of cattle that maybe they didn't have before. So if you've got some pretty good calves that are all kind of the same color and the same, they'll probably all go in the same pen if they're that kind of deal. So I think it's a little different selling than some folks are used to when they're just, you may just selling singles or doing some different things like that.
Yeah.
And you have a pretty good reach, too, as far as the producers that are coming in here, because I'm in Webster County, and I've got some folks over in Webster County that they've been selling here for a good many years, and I think that also speaks of the reputation that you've talked about, because it's not just in this area right here. Webster County's a few miles away, but those producers see the value in what you're doing and then have continued to bring those when there's some livestock facilities a lot closer to them. But for their operation and for the way they do things, this has been a positive experience for them. So I think that speaks of, the job that you all are doing.
We appreciate it. And it has seemed to work over the years. It's a little bit more time consuming in the morning when we weigh the cattle, getting them grouped and, weighed and penned correctly. But when our sale starts, it does move very fast. And, that sheet's in front of you, to expect. And you can come in and put your deals together rather than just have to wait to see what shows up, comes in the door the next time. So it has worked. And we do appreciate the support from different ones that have tried us. You know, the person that has a load lot, you know, we can still sell those. We have, keep those wean cattle, and we offer those wean type sales for people that want to come to that. And those the program cattle, it's you know, there's a place for them too at those special sales. Mm-hmm. So you try to accommodate whatever's out there, and traveling a little distance is becoming, you know, more of a normal for mm-hmm. everything we do. The land around us really, I can remember when it was everywhere you drove, there was a few cattle.
Yeah.
Now, the corns and beans are, and you go a little further down towards Clarksville, and it's a lot of houses and yeah. stuff. So, you know, there's been a lot of things that have changed with our land, but I think the way we've conducted our business, we've tried to be supportive of all the people that's out there in our yep. cattle market and cattle business.
Well, I think, you know, when you conduct your business with integrity and honesty and those things are what draws people in.
Absolutely.
And customer service, those things. And, you know, we're sitting here kind of on the Kentucky-Tennessee line, so you draw people from a lot of people from Tennessee
right.
and a ton of people from Kentucky that are over an hour away, mm-hmm. you know, a lot yeah. in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So, I think it just speaks volume for y'all's the way y'all do business really here is a very customer friendly kind of a place, and the sales are very friendly too. Mr. Cordy does a fantastic job, you know, auctioneering, very friendly. You know, it's not a high pressure sales deal, and Kevin Laurent and I were talking about that. I think even on our podcast that we did for the Bred Heifer sale about how mm-hmm. family, you know, friendly that is mm-hmm. to, you know, he's going to slow down and he's going to make sure you're doing what you want to do. And I know that's the attitude that
right.
y'all want to
right.
have too.
Yeah, he's been involved with us since I started almost, and Kent does a great job. He is you know, farmer's friend. He wants yep. to do the best for both parties, but he's clear, he's understanding, and I think that goes a long way with yep. The farmer being comfortable at buying at a sale like we'll have tomorrow.
Yep.
It does make a difference. Sure does.
Well, and we've said it 100 times on this podcast, 100 times, probably, no kidding, but it's about building those relationships, and that's what you've done. You have built... and your crew has built the relationships with the clients that you have, the producers that are coming in, and that's what it's about. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. people need they have to trust you and trust what you're doing if they're going to really do business with you. And you all have clearly done a good job with that, and it has paid dividends for
yeah.
you.
You know, and that's a perfect segue as we roll into kind of why Mark's here. He's kind of a celebrity. Y'all probably didn't know y'all were in the midst of a celebrity, but Mark is the president of the Livestock Marketing Association, and this is not the Kentucky Livestock Market. This is for the whole entire nation, Livestock Marketing Association. So, Mark, tell us a little bit. Tell us kind of what they do. You know, and then maybe kind of roll into, you know, why you got involved in that.
Our LMA is the best, one of the best friends for our livestock marketing group. It's a 800 member, a little over 800 members mm-hmm. Across the United States and a few in Canada. They're either dealers, a dealer can be a member, or a livestock market. You know, we take care of the thing, that outside things, that the day-to-day things, it gives us as operators and owners a time to, you know, take care of our business. But the things going in Washington, the things that are being done with government affairs, and we have the committees that take care of some background stuff for us, and we provide an insurance service for those markets that, you know, we do things a little different, and then it's not just a normal business that a lot of people are familiar with, but everybody in our organization knows what we do, and the staff is very involved. They understand our business, and I think they live and breathe our business. We have our REOs that are regional executive officers that are represent each region, and they make visits to our barns regularly and make you know, they'll help you with any new owner. Mm-hmm. If you've got a need an animal handling guide, or we go through that training, deals with all the new owners and things like that. So, you know, our job, we feel like, is to make a better operator out of you at your business. And I guess it's our goal is to try to make the business flow better, mm-hmm. and to keep things keep the government out of our business as much as we can, and let us do our job, and that's becoming more and more of
increasingly difficult.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of things that are the waters of the United, you know, those mm-hmm. waters deal, the animal ID, the EPA things. We have a lot of things that we sort of work on projects that keep us.
And y'all kind of got an arm that kind of takes care of that stuff in Washington, like a legislative arm that helps you with lobbying or different projects that y'all feel important, different issues that you can go and they actually go and talk to from the membership. They go actually go kind of like a Farm Bureau that has people that does that. And, I mean, LMA has those things as well to go talk to legislators about your issues that are concerning and affecting livestock markets.
Yes, we're trying to partner with a lot of those industry ones that are think like us and mm-hmm. do the same things. And mm-hmm. we know when we go to Washington and we make our visits, you know, a lot of that's the first question when you go in those offices is where does everybody else stand on the issues that mm-hmm. we're having? So, we know that as we need those partners to work together, and American Farm Bureau has been a very good partner. Mm-hmm. We try to work with NCBA. We try mm-hmm. to work with all the cattle mm-hmm. organizations to sort out those things that we might not see quite eye to eye on, and are able to go there with a unified voice. It's tougher the more people you try to get in the room to get those to think the same way. Yeah. But, and a lot of people don't think of us as a producer organization. They think of us as a livestock marketing organization. But we're the first point of contact with mm-hmm. those producers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people that will come here, and they'll ask you, you know, the questions, and what can I do to make my operation better? What could I do? Do I need to wean my calves? Do I need to vaccinate my calves? What kind of bull do I need to give? Mm-hmm. You know, and we take that personal, and we know if we can make a better product for them, mm-hmm. makes it easier for us to sell, makes it better for that buyer on the other end. And it's a place where buyers and sellers come together, mm-hmm. and we try to put that together as best we can, mm-hmm. and try to make that transaction as smooth as possible.
You know, one good example of that would be for the past couple of years, LMA has covered the cost of the BQCA for producers.
Yes.
Thank you for that, but above and beyond that is to me the first step in everything that we do to maintain that reputation with the consumer starts on the farm.
Right.
And being able to cover that, it's a small cost anyway. It's really a nominal cost, but on the same hand, the generosity to step out and take that on for producers, it helps to encourage the producers, but it's telling those producers thanks for doing what you do.
Right. It's we've understand that in over the years, our population has gotten pretty distant from agriculture. Mm-hmm. And we have worked hard. We, all of us in agriculture and farming and ranching, are hard workers. But I think our deal is, we haven't told our story very good. And I think all of us, we know how to do our job, but we need to sort of tell how we do our job and mm-hmm. make that a little more public. And we're trying to do that better. I think our producers are wanting to produce a product that is better, and I think the more education we do is the key to that and getting them to a better job. Yeah.
And I think too on with paying, like you said, for paying for that BQCA training, it is a way to say thank you to the producers, but it's also saying that we feel this is important. Having this BQCA certification is important to you all, because of the education in it and making sure that they are handling the cattle and in a way that is safe not only to the cattle but also to themselves, and so that at the end, you know, that you're the products that they're trying to sell that you're seeing in the meat counters, that's as high quality as what we can get, and try to eliminate some of those blemishes and things like that. And so I think it's a two-way street by saying thank you, but also showing that it's important to you all as well.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's a big key to our programs, that putting out a very safe product is, mm-hmm. And I think it's one that we can be proud of, mm-hmm. and we just need to let people know that what we're doing, and we try to do it the right way.
Yeah.
What do you think is, in the cattle business as a whole, what do you think is the biggest obstacle that cattle producers are facing today, or, you know, in the last year, or what do you think's coming even in the future, do you think? But what do you think that biggest obstacle is?
Well, I think in our area, the land is becoming harder and harder to keep in forage production. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it, you know, we're seeing it very evident right here in our area. But, you know, because of my association with the all over our United States, mm-hmm. everybody's talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big you know, problem is losing that forage land to other areas, urbanization, crop production. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we think of crop production still agriculture, but still, you know, we have to have hay. It's mm-hmm. a necessity. Well, hay ground is becoming more harder and harder to come by, and because of the crop production mm-hmm. and things that that are going on. I always tell people, I said the no-till planter and the sprayer has taken a lot of land that was pasture land and, mm-hmm. and made it easier to convert into cropland, and it has taken a lot of our productive cattle ground, and it's hard to compete with that income level with a cow and the slope and the process that you know, the turnover is not as fast as some of the other.
Do you think that, you know, is there a decline in the number of cattle producers, or do you think we're staying solid? What are you seeing? Because, you know, when you think about, you had mentioned further away from the farm, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. But anytime that you have livestock, that's a daily commitment. That is not something that you can just go off and leave. So when you get ready to go on any kind of vacation or any kind of trip or anything, you've got a whole lot of work ahead of you to make sure that that livestock is going to be taken care of in your absence. And so when we start seeing some folks that's a little further removed from agriculture, are you seeing that across in Kentucky, but are you seeing it across the nation and where you travel?
Yes, that's probably one of the hottest topics that we discuss in our meetings right now, is those producers that are leaving our business, mm-hmm. aging mm-hmm. of our producers. You know, the people that pick the checks up, you see a few grandkids coming in to pick them up, but mm-hmm. They, you know, they're not dressed like they came from the... mm-hmm.
They hadn't been working the cattle.
They didn't haul the cattle, right? Yeah. And I'm nothing against those, but yep. we... we're losing those smaller producers. Mm-hmm. you know, a person has 20, 30, 50 cows. That's not their only income. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we don't try to advance that producer profitability on those animal units, mm-hmm. it's getting harder and harder to hold those mm-hmm. in production. And we're seeing it just like I know with this land, the farmer he was written a check on Wednesday. And they'll be planting, they're spraying it today, mm-hmm. and be planting it Monday. Yeah. And it's close to $300 an acre. So, yeah. mm-hmm. you know.
That's what I was fixing to say. Yeah. You know, land rent for crop ground yes. is astronomical in places. And then you've got the younger people that are not necessarily interested in working that hard to try to make a dollar. I mean, it's
or they may be off the farm completely.
Right.
You know,
right.
Removed.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's they don't more have and time. More the case.
Yes, that's yeah. become the case. Most of them have removed, you know, they just didn't see enough future there. Mm-hmm. They've taken jobs elsewhere, and it's, you know, wintertime, there's a lot more people that sort of background will do a few cattle that way, but they can sort of stop in November and be out of the cattle business in the winter. Yeah. But now, what's the challenging part is keeping people in the cow and calf business.
Mm-hmm. And yes.
I think that's a that's come becoming evident here. If we don't have that cow-calf producer, you don't have the backgrounder. You don't have the cattle to go in the feed yard.
Right.
You don't have the cattle to put in your slaughterhouse.
Yep.
You don't have the meat to eat. So, you know, that animal unit has got to start with that cow-calf. And those are the producers that I see us losing pretty rapidly in this area.
I can think of some that just right off the top of my head, a few that have done that they're background in cattle now, but they're out of the cow-calf business.
Right, right.
And I had one guy tell me one time, I said, well, if everybody gets out of the cow-calf business, there's not going to be any backgrounders, that's for sure.
That's
so,
right.
You know, and the older I get, the more I go, boy, it sure would be easier to be doing something besides cow-calf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Either that or I'm going to have to change calving seasons or something. Yeah. But
December and January would be totally different months if you didn't have a cow-calf operation.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, but I do enjoy it right now. But but I do, the older I get, and hopefully I've got some grandkids, and kind of like Mark, that are they got some grandkids that are coming along, and he's got some sons, and I do, and you know, hopefully they're going to kind of take over one of these days, and I'm kind of looking forward to that a little bit, but you know, and I can just sit back and tell them what to do. But Mark, talk with us a little bit. I know a hot topic is animal identification. You know, that's been one that we've been hearing for a lot of years. You know, and I was here when we had the old tag reader in here for the CPH sale. That's been a bunch of years ago, actually. And, you know, so things have evolved and things are different now, but kind of where are we on animal identification in from a national standpoint?
Well, I think there's a lot of organizations that sort of look at it a little bit differently. I think when you come back to our southeast states, to our smaller producer areas, animal ID is a very scary and very invasive topic. And LMA is not against animal identification. It's voluntary basis. We're all for it. I just, the deal with animal identification, when you get down to that and you start identifying every animal out there, it will have to start at the farm or you're going to change the operations completely. You know, we feel like that... the government's wanting it. We feel like it should be funded through the government. You know, we've actually talked a little bit with some of the different ones right now that think it ought to be something in the farm bill right now. Talked about, you know,
yeah, I've heard that.
Considering get the funding, go on and put it in there if we're going to be have a better, more, I guess, aggressive identification system. We feel like now that it's phase one is working fairly well, identifying the breeding animals and the slaughter animals. Most everybody can call back here and we can get a trace back on a cow that's that there's a problem in or question about. We can look that producer up fairly soon. But there are some organizations. Was listening to interview that Todd Wilkerson with the NCBA had this week on animal ID. And it came up. NCBA has a little more aggressive stance on animal ID than maybe some of the producers that maybe they represented. And we feel like we're trying to get a open discussion with them and maybe some producers involved a little bit more. What that's going to, you know, what it's going to look like, how it's going to change the way they do business, if and when that comes down the road. And, you know, we feel like it will change, you know, to that big producer that has, you know, his 500 cows and he does everything. He steers all of his calves and he works his cattle probably two or three times a year. To put an ID tag in won't be a big problem. Now, where you go with that information, whether you've got to start that process somewhere. And I think there's still a big, the big picture still hasn't been looked at, how that's going to play out and how it's going to be, where that information is going to be stored. Is it going to be, how accessible it is to it, and who's going to be in charge of it? And you know, anytime we get compromised, you know, that it's invasive on our daily lives and our businesses and everything. And we feel like that's something that should be well monitored, and you shouldn't be just out there for anybody to be accessing that kind of information, because you never know how that could be used against you. But right. There is more and more talk about it. Hoof and mouth is a big thing, and you know, we feel like the vaccine program should be probably advanced. We think that should be looked at really more than maybe just putting an ID tag in something and not having a way to back it up when that with a system that's functioning.
Yeah.
I think education is going to have to be the key on when you move into any kind of change, really.
Yeah.
When there's a big change happening, I think fear is what takes over. And so the producer themselves, there's going to be some fear there of how that's going to affect them. And then when they're scared, when you're fearful of something, you know, it's hard to make decisions. It's hard to really see things for what they really are sometimes, too. And I think it's going to be important for that these producers are educated on not only, you know, who's going to look at it, but why are we doing this in the first place? And hopefully the goal of that is not it's going to be a benefit to them down the road, too. There's a benefit for the producer somewhere down the road, too. And hopefully they can see that part of it too, if that does happen, which probably in some way, shape, or form, it's probably going to happen at some point.
Well, I think so. The cattle industry is so much different from the poultry industry and the swine industry. They are totally integrated, and to me, the cattle industry is the last. We're the last one standing.
You're about right.
The deal, and so you know, anytime you know, obviously from an extension educator standpoint, I can see the value of having each cow identified and being able to gather data on her, whether she's getting bred back on time, whether she's how big a calf she's weaning, all these different things. But there's a cost associated with all of that.
Sure.
And you know, number one, can we afford to do it? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a big thing. And then in getting people to do it is a completely different thing.
I think it really needs to be, is that producer going to get value from this product?
Right,
right.
Yeah. I think the end product producers are the ones that's really pushing it harder, because that ID gives them a little more ease of selling their product, or a little bit more value they can say that they have. And I think it seems like, you know, the dollar gets to the end product rather than to the beginning product. Mm-hmm. And I think that's our problem with the system. We don't seem, as the producer that starts the program and does most of the work, get the benefit of that,
right,
of that system. And that's our pushback. You know, if you pay for a product, if you see value in doing it, you'll do it. Mm-hmm. You'll make a change. But when you don't see enough value there, it makes it hard to swallow all the costs and all the hardship that goes along with those programs that the end producer seems to get most of the benefit from.
Yeah, and you know, and we're getting inundated with like feed prices, and you know, we'll have, and I just bought ear tags and wormer for my cattle this week, and I mean, I like the
mineral.
And mineral is ridiculous. Right. Is ridiculous. You know, $20 to $30 a bag, depending on what you get in it. So
we got a high mix this time with some. A little bit of antibiotic in it, and I think it was close to $40 a bag for some of that with this fly control. And
well, that's what I'm saying, you know, and the problem is a lot of times some things are not available as others, you know, like sometimes last year we found a mineral that had IGR and rumensin in it. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't find that this time. Oh, okay. And so anyway, it's Yeah, you know, when you get inundated with those kind of, and then they come back and say, well, you need to put a tag in your cow and you need to identify, and, you know, you're not seeing the value of that.
Right.
If especially if you're not the end, you know, if you're not taking those cattle to slaughter,
that's right.
and that kind of thing. So it's harder for you to see the value in being able to do that. And, you know, and with the way the government is now, and this is obviously not a political show, but it could get that way pretty quick. With the way things are working in Washington, you know, it's just things are just so slow, but they seem to come up with all these grand ideas that really don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it seems to be. My eyes got open when I went to Washington about, this business requires fast decisions. We can't, you know, it's a live product, it's mm-hmm. perishable product, so you can't just say, well, let's just go home and sleep on this. We'll come back tomorrow and make a decision. You got to make it right now.
Or next fall.
Right. Yeah. Right. Next year. So, we have a little different motor, I think, than some of those that make our laws. Mm. And going to Washington opened my eyes a lot when I made those visits. And you go to those senators and congressmen's offices and you talk with them. They feel your pain, but they've got so many more doors you got to go through, and you got to run it by this one and that one, and the next thing you know, it's 6 months down the road or maybe a year later. And, we see and can show you the reason we think this is better, but they have to get the whole picture and everybody they got to share it with.
And the problem's still not fixed.
And it's still not fixed.
And then, too, it's just like – in a lot of situations that the folks that may be working on that aren't ones that are out here, well, they're not out here in this business every day with boots on the ground.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of us may think we know what it's like, but until you're doing it, you really don't know what it's like.
That's right.
And I think that's just one of those, you know, obstacles, I guess. We all have to live with it at some point or another in any business that you're in, but it is frustrating. And I, like you were talking about, you know, losing, you know, the cattle producers because of many different reasons. And sometimes these changes like this are just that, those ones that are teetering back and forth, or whether they want to just throw their hands up and say, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Gotcha. And something like this could be the deciding factor for them to say, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that. I'm not making this change. I'm just going to sell out, and I'm going to sit back, and I'm just going to not do it anymore.
I think that's our fear that, you know, the small producer is just going to have, you know, he just will say it's just not worth all the time that I'm having to put into it, and they will exit the business.
Yeah.
Well, to end, we're kind of getting closer on time here, so to end on a good note, Mark, discuss with us quickly or in a few minutes here that we have, but discuss about how much better the quality of the cattle have gotten since you started and today.
Well, I think that it's amazing how much what that's done to us. And I think education and the money that is being spent. We have the tobacco buyout did a lot, put a lot of money in, especially in Kentucky. It started there. Tennessee came late a little bit behind that, and they went on with the TAEP program. Mm-hmm. Kentucky has a CAPE program for cost share. Education and better, I guess when we started, the quality, you know, black and black white face was about, everybody thought that was the only way you could go. But you still had a lot of different frame sizes and things like that. We had to make probably 2 to 3 different grades of that same class of cattle. And I remember you had several cattle in that number 2 kind of pen that, I'll be honest, today that you just tag that one animal and just there's not enough. We don't need them that much because people have done so much better job with their breeding programs, their handling of the cattle have just improved that much. And you know, I go back to they talk about our cattle numbers and things like that, and I say, well, you know, we don't eat numbers, we eat pounds, we eat ounces, you know, and we do things so different and so much better now than we did 40, 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 40 years ago, we didn't need an animal until he's probably 3 years of age. And he probably didn't weigh much more than 900 to 1,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, at 16 months of age, you've got him weighing 1,300, 1,400 pounds. So we do things better. Our efficiency that is so much better. And I liken it to the education that we do with our producers. And, you know, social media has its good and its bad.
Sure.
It gets information out a lot faster as long as you can depend on the information. And
it's just not always right. It's not always right.
I think you have to sort of do a little bit of background on it yourself before you
got to filter that information.
I think that's right. But we do appreciate the extension offices and the help that they've given through over the years and working with them and educating our producers, because we can really tell a difference in our cattle. They've gotten better.
Well, you know, obviously with partners like y'all, you know, I've been down here to several educational events, and y'all have partnered with Extension many times in Kentucky and Tennessee, and we've all partnered together. And, you know, we've done a lot of different educational events here at the yard.
Yes, we have.
You know, it's been a great place to have live animals and have a group come through, and you can look at the different things. And
the shoot side BQCA.
Yeah, we did, you know, hadn't been too long ago. We did some of those things and talked about grading and tried to educate producers on what grading is. And so when your calf comes through and it's a small frame, you understand why it was a small frame. You probably knew that before you got here. You don't want to admit it,
right?
But you probably knew it before you got
those
here.
Better producers know when they got one. You're right. It's become a lot better over the years, and we've enjoyed that time, because I think you can, the one-on-one contact you have there can be so much more teaching point, and show pictures always was made it a lot clearer to me than just the words did. Right. And you show that person, that animal, that just because he's black doesn't mean he's this, you know. And I think it's been I really think our cattle have advanced to a point that you don't – I've learned you don't down anybody's breed. You just try to – you know, when you're in the area that is predominantly – The black-hatted cattle, it's sort of hard to go against that deal. So I always thought it's easier to go downstream than it is to be swimming upstream. So,
sure.
There's good cattle in all, and it's our job just to try to match them up and put them together in the best package that we can to give those to those buyers.
Well, Mark, before we get to our timely tip, I just want to say thanks for being such a great partner, and Stephanie and Tom here at the yard Stephanie's fantastic to work with, and anytime I've got a question, I can just text her, and you know, she was great to work with on the bull sale, and your crew here is outstanding, and we appreciate it.
Well, I do want to give a shout out to them. You can't do it by yourself. It does take all the support help, the guys in the back, the gals in the office, and I guess it's still okay to call them guys and gals, but
it is on this show. Well, it is on this show, brother.
That's the only reason I came, because I thought it would be okay. No, I do appreciate y'all's time and your effort, and we do hope we're doing it the right way. And we're open to criticism, and that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to take it. You're supposed to learn from it. And if you can't learn from it, you're I don't think you're doing your job.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're moving into that point of the show, David. We always wrap things up with a timely tip. And since we're at a sale barn today, we've kindly decided that beforehand that was going to be our timely tip. And we just want to remind everybody out there to support your local stockyard, your local sale barn, wherever you are across the country. If you have a local sale barn that you like to do business with and feel comfortable marketing your livestock through, by all means, that's the place to do it. Not only are you supporting your local economy and supporting those people around you, you're also going to – that's the place where you'll find true price discovery for the product that you're marketing. So that's our timely tip for today.
That's a good one. And, you know, we encourage folks all the time to use that livestock market. There's a lot of ways to market your cattle, but these folks are the ones that are – that are supporting your local economy and supporting those ball teams. We're sitting in a room that's got several ball teams that the Kentucky Tennessee Livestock has supported over the years. So just, you know, we need to support local, and, you know, in agriculture, we need to support each other. So that's a good timely tip for sure.
Absolutely. So, Mark, we really appreciate you sitting down with us today. We want to thank you and thank our host for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.